Oh, Shannon's lip syncing along.
I'm
ready for more lip sync battles. I actually watched like a best of lip sync battles the other day for the umpteenth time. But welcome to the Atheist Experience. We are live today. Is Sunday, the 8th of November, 2020. In the United States, we have just concluded an election process, and the media outlets have declared Joe Biden the next president of the United States. But as the ACA is a nonprofit educational organization promoting positive atheism and the separation of religion and government, and as a 501c3, we're not going to be talking about politics or endorsing anybody or anybody else here. So congrats to everybody who voted and everybody who won, and hell, congrats to those of you who lost. Some of you, I'm probably happier that you lost than others, but we are here to have conversations for people to tell us what they believe and why. And Shannon, how are you?
I'm good. I'm really excited to be back. I'm very much looking forward to some good calls today. I'm happy
to
be here. And as always, it's a pleasure. Thank you for always welcoming and inviting me to come and participate in this. I think conversation is really important, and this is a great venue to do it. So thank you for always welcoming me and allowing me to be part of it.
It's the least I can do for you being, you know, all awesome and stuff.
I'll do. That's a lot to live up to. I'll do my best.
Speaking of which, you have the con, and so I want to go through the announcements really quick, and then you can start picking callers and directing and everything, and I'm just going to sit here and chit-chat as much as I can. But as a reminder for the people who are watching it live, there's a number of ways that you can support the Atheist Community of Austin. And as a reminder, the Atheist Community of Austin is a nonprofit educational organization, which I just mentioned. But in addition to this program, the ACA also produces Talk Heathen, which aired earlier today, Nonprofits, which aired in the gap between Sundays at 3, also Secular Sexuality, Truth Wanted, and lots of other things. You can support by clicking that donate link up above chat if you're watching us live right now. 100% of your donations go to the ACA, Google, and YouTube, et cetera. Don't take a cut at all. You can also get yourself some AE merch if you want, like something tangible for the money that you contribute to the organization. There's t-shirts and coffee cups and things like that. You can become a membership directly at YouTube, and you know that gives you certain things, including when we're shorthanded on volunteers, it may be necessary on occasion to change the live chat so that it's members only. That's one of the benefits you get. It doesn't happen very often. I think it happened today on Talk Heathen briefly. We try to make sure that we keep open communication, but this is a volunteer-run organization, and sometimes life gets in the way, especially when there are elections and pandemics and sporting events and, I don't know, family dinners or whatever else is going to take priority over this. You can also become a member and join at patreon.com/theatheistexperience. We have two new Facebook pages we've been promoting, and that's the AXP fan or Atheist Experience fan group, which is AXPFG, and then there's also the Atheist Experience private fan group, which is AXPBFG. You can join both of those. This show wouldn't be around if it weren't for all the wonderful crew people, and there's some new crew. It's the new crew for you. all the old people who have heard of the New Zoo Review will have got my kind of sing-song kind of reference. And yes, we did air, I guess, a new episode of Nonprofits Sundays at 3, and we're glad it's going out. Please, you know, check it out. And there'll be a link up right there at the bottom of the screen, youtube.com/TheNonprofitsACA. That'll get you there, and you can find out who was on today, who was the guest, what did they talk about, and everything else. But I'm thrilled because I just get to sit here and do nothing. Shannon, enjoy the show.
All right, Matt, thank you for the introduction. I guess we'll get going. We'll start with the first call today. We'll just go from the top.
Don't we always start with the first call? How could we possibly start with the third one?
I meant the first in the queue. Okay. Matt, let's not fight right off the jump.
I'm offering some thoughts that may or may not be of use to you.
Bonnie, hello. What would you like to talk about today?
I didn't know I was going to get on right away.
You did. Congratulations. You did it. You're the first call.
Yeah, because I'm an atheist. So I was like, oh, I'm surprised. Okay. The reason I wanted to call was because what woke me up was when I was reading Acts chapter 7, verses 40 through 43, I think it is. Stephen, when he was dying, he said that after they left Egypt, after the Israelites left Egypt, they took up the golden calf, and then it says God handed them over to worship the heavens, and they took up the star of Ernol. They were worshiping Molech during those 40 years, and then, oh, it says the tent of Molech. So, you know, everybody thinks the tent, you know, was God, Yahweh, Jehovah, you know, but it says the tent of Molech, which is known for child sacrifice. So anyway, so I looked at that and I thought, okay, well, during the 40 years, that's when they got the Mosaic Law. And then it says they weren't offering sacrifices, you know, sin offerings to Yahweh or Jehovah. It says they were offering them to Molech. So then I started through Exodus and
I'm trying to figure out what the problem is here, because Acts 7 doesn't.
Oh, it's no problem.
It doesn't endorse it. Well, then why are we talking? I'm confused as to what thing was. I thought you were calling in to suggest.
No, I didn't say it endorsed. It's when Stephen was dying, you know, before he died, you know, got stoned to death. He accused the Jews that during the 40 years they were in the wilderness, they were worshiping the tent of Molech. Now, it wouldn't be the tent of Jehovah or Yahweh. It would be the tent of Molech, and he's known for child sacrifice.
So what?
When they got the Mosaic Law. So then I went through Exodus, and then that's when I discovered the slavery and all that.
I don't know why you're pointing to Acts 7, because Acts 7 does not in any way suggest that child sacrifice is good, and Acts 7 doesn't mention child sacrifice at all. You're inferring that from Moloch, but even if it were true, the author isn't saying this was a good thing. He's saying it was a bad thing. So we have an instance of the Bible suggesting that something that we think is a bad thing is a bad thing, and I don't know what the problem is.
Well, I don't see it's a problem. See, to me, that I'm saying that's what woke me up from religion was I saw that, and I thought, okay, that's when they got the
Why would it wake you up from religion for somebody to say that sacrificing children is bad, and we're not doing that?
From the Bible? I don't understand what you're saying.
The Bible isn't endorsing child sacrifice, correct?
I'm saying here that Stephen said during the time they were in the wilderness, they were worshiping Molech.
Yes, and he's calling them out on that and saying it's a bad thing.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I don't understand why.
I don't understand why we're talking about this. Literally, hang on, Bonnie. Literally, the book says this is a bad thing, and you're pointing to that and going, that's what woke me up to get me out of religion. How does that get somebody out of religion?
Because when I saw that, I thought, okay, during the 40 years, supposedly they were worshiping Molech and not Yahweh or Jehovah.
No, that's not the case.
Stephen said when he was dying.
No, that's not what he said.
Stephen said.
The fact that some of them worship Molech does not mean that they were all worshiping Molech. We know from the Old Testament that they turned away from Yahweh and worshiped other gods. That's the whole reason we end up with two different versions of the Ten Commandments, because Moses' brother Aaron made a golden calf. How does any of this wake us up?
Different versions. What I'm saying is, when I saw that, I thought to myself, that's when they got the Mosaic Law. So if Stephen is saying that they were worshiping Molech during those 40 years, I want to see what the book of Exodus says. So then I started at Exodus. I went through the whole thing, you know, scripture by scripture. That's when I discovered that the Ten Commandments were not written on stone. They were verbal. There's three different versions. Two of them says they were spoken. One says they were on stone. The one
there were two on stone because he threw down the first set of stones and broke them.
Why are you essentially just saying that you found a bunch of things that were, you know, either indecipherable or contradictory, and you find them confusing?
I don't know.
I'm saying even Matt is saying when you read with the first set of stones, those were the instructions for the tabernacle.
Right. Yeah.
So that's actually in the first set of stones. The second set of stones is in, I think it's Exodus 34. Where,
this is becoming super convoluted to me, though. Like, Bonnie, I hate to interrupt you. I've been trying to listen so that I can try to piece together what the point like drill down what the point is. And I'm having a difficult time doing so while we're engaging in this dialogue.
Okay, I was listening to a debate with Ray Comfort, and he made
That sounds awful.
Commandments written on stone, and everybody thinks they were written on stone, and they were not written on the stone. In Exodus chapter 20, it was verbal, and I think it's Deuteronomy 32, it was verbal. You get to Exodus 34, and it's talking about the stone.
Bonnie,
these are trivial.
Bonnie,
he understands that.
Bonnie, yeah. Take a breath. Exodus 32 talks about Moses coming down the mountain with the Ten Commandments, and he breaks them because he sees that they're worshiping a golden calf. But in any case,
the Ten Commandments are in Exodus chapter 20. Exodus 34.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Commandments, and one of those is that they were to burn.
Bonnie,
they were not to
smother. Bonnie, I'm going to interrupt you for a second. I'm really glad that you're looking into all of this stuff and carefully examining it. But I'm not 100% certain that you're able to effectively articulate it to us in a way that we know how to engage in the conversation with you. So I am going to let you go now. And thank you so much for the call, because I feel as though we're kind of spinning our wheels here, but I appreciate that you're looking into it. And thank you for wanting to engage in conversation. Okay.
I've been looking into it and studying it for like 5 years. So I know what I'm talking about.
I don't doubt that at all, Bonnie, but we are having a difficult time communicating with you. So I don't want to, I don't want to continue down a frustrating conversation when we haven't found an effective way to communicate with one another. So I am going to let you go and thank you for the call. And please continue listening. And thank you for engaging in the conversation with us. Okay, Bonnie? Thank you. Have a good rest of your evening. Bye. Bye. Yeah, that was difficult. It was difficult for me to discern what we were supposed to engage in that conversation. So I guess we will move on. We'll start talking to Alvin. We'll wait. Go ahead, Matt. Go ahead.
It's irritating for me that somebody calls in and they've been studying it for 5 years and they think they know what they're talking about, but they get stuff wrong and this is irrelevant. The first set of tablets, which were described in Exodus as being written by the finger of God, were smashed by Moses because it built a golden calf and he had to go up and get it all over again. But in any case, at no point is, you know, there are other, you can point her to other verses and made a case for child sacrifice, but you can't do it from Act 7. So she sees Act 7 where Stephen is supposedly telling them about when they worship Moloch, but that doesn't mean that they worship Moloch for 40 years of the entire time. What he's talking about is that there were Israelites who worshiped other gods, which has been called out throughout the entire, the Old Testament is a chronicle of Jews pissing off God and failing to live up to what God wants them to do. And every time they get bent out of shape at him, they run off and worship another God. This to me is the strongest argument for the fact that the Jews' story is not true, nor is it believable. And the truth of that is evident when you talk about Moses leading people away. So it's a good thing we got to Exodus, because if you were in a foreign country, Shannon, and I'm gonna shorten this up because this is a favorite of mine that I haven't done in a few years. If you were in a foreign country and you were pregnant and you didn't speak the language at all, and you started feeling labor pains and other stuff, and you couldn't get anybody to pay any attention to you, and you got down on your knees and you prayed, God, please save me and save my baby. And a glowing ball of light appeared in front of you, and you felt an urge to follow it. And you followed the ball of light, and it took you to a car that was running and had its keys in it and a driver. And it led you around to the passenger side and you get in and it leads you down the highway. And as you go down the highway, all the cars are getting out of the way and it gets you all the way up to the hospital. Is there anything that could ever happen to you that would make you go, yeah, that wasn't a real thing. That wasn't God. Let me go pick another God. That's just not real. Nobody would do that after witnessing a miracle like that. Even if they got to the hospital and tragically miscarried, they're still going to acknowledge that there was, you know, here's something extraordinary, supernatural that led them here. And you're not just going to be like, oh, let me go pick another God. And yet that's exactly what the Israelites do, which means that the story is bullshit.
Right. Fair enough. Well, I can understand the frustration, though, especially when you're constantly engaged in these types of dialogues. When you hear people bring up arguments that aren't the strongest arguments or aren't necessarily as cogent as you would like, it can be incredibly frustrating because people count that against others. So I appreciate
that. They also counted against us. It's like, why didn't the atheist experience challenge this misinformation?
Yeah, no, I completely understand. Absolutely. All right, we're going to move on to... So, go ahead.
No, I'm good.
You're good? Okay. We're going to move on to Alvin then. Hi, Alvin. You're on the atheist experience. Yeah, what would you like to talk about today? I'm good. How are you?
Well, I have... I've actually been on the show a couple times in the last few weeks talking about the theory of biblical patterns. And the last time I was on, Jim wasn't impressed that I'd only looked at 100 books. And so in the meantime, I've looked at the equivalent of the first sentence of 100 billion books, well, actually pseudo sentences, by looking at variations and so forth, and looking at sentences off the web, off the internet and so forth. And okay. I just thought I'd be a little more impressive.
Oh, okay. So you're here to be impressive. All right. Well, instead of just telling us what you did, why don't you present an argument? See if that's impressive.
My argument is, as I said in earlier shows, I found 100 patterns in Genesis 1:1 that are beyond chance and beyond mortal.
How do you know that they're beyond chance?
Well,
how did you come to the determination to quantify that they're beyond chance? Like, what statistical analysis did you use?
Well, I just used a standard probability calculation. If you know
what standard probability calculation, like a t-test, some sort of what did you use? Like, if you're using multiple passages, it would have to be something like an ANOVA, like an analysis of variance. And what did you use for the value for your distributions?
Well, I can tell you the equation I use. It's kind of complicated, sure. But basically, it's just taking the number of possibilities, the number of ways that it can occur, and the number of ways it does occur. And
how do you know the number of ways? Like, how do you effectively quantify that in a way that is in and itself statistically significant? So when you say the number of ways that it can take place, how do you reliably come to a determination of the number of ways something that can take place?
Well,
from a statistical standpoint,
I went over this equation with a PhD in mathematics, and mm-hmm. did all my equations, and he agreed. But for example, and I use KNNT, and I can give you the whole equation if you want. But basically, mm-hmm. for example, there's 7 words, and 7 is very significant in the Bible. Well, that's 1 in 7 that there would be 7 words as opposed to 8 or 5 or something else.
So if you're plugging something into something like an analysis of a variance, like if you're looking at a standard distribution, for example, so whenever we're doing statistical analysis, we're always going to go against a standard distribution. So that's that kind of bell curve that you see. So how many standard deviations away from the mean was your result? How did you determine that it was statistically valid?
Well, I didn't really compare it to.
What was your p-value?
I just look at. Well, let me tell you the equation I used.
Your output would tell you how many standard deviations away from the mean it was. In order, if you're using incredibly complex mathematical analysis for statistics, for example, first you're going to need to quantify your variables. So you're going to need to figure out what is outside of the mean in a standard distribution. You're going to need to set out that standard distribution. You're going to need to know what the mean of that standard distribution is. And you're going to need to figure out a way to assess whether or not your results are valid by figuring out how many standard deviations they are away from the mean. So one of the first things you're going to need to determine, and I'm surprised you don't know it offhand, if this is something that you've done and conferred with a PhD on, is understand how many standard deviations from the mean your results were. And then after that, you're going to have to do some sort of post hoc analysis. You're going to have to get your p-value, for example, in order to assess it. So without even presenting any information to me, I'm incredibly confused right now why you don't know what the output results were of your statistical analysis. Sounds like you might not have done it.
I just used one standard equation. I can give you what the equation is.
What standard equation? What's the name of the standard equation? What's it called? There's several when we're looking at inferential statistics, which is what you would have had to use, is some sort of inferential statistics. You couldn't have used hard statistics because you're talking about probabilities.
Yeah, I don't know. This is just a standard. I don't know the name of the equation. I can give you the.
You don't know the name of the equation that you use to run your analysis.
No, it's just a standard probability equation that you use.
Well, there's many standard probability equations. I mean, like if you're looking at like a. You can do like some sort of correlation test, for example. Correlation tests are standards analyses, but you can't make any inferences from them. So have you studied statistics at all? Like, where did you learn your statistical back? Like, if you don't even know the name of the statistical analysis you used, I have really strong skepticism that you actually performed a statistical analysis.
Yeah, I'm not a mathematician.
Did you perform a statistical analysis?
Probability equation.
What's a standard probability equation? There's many. Was it a t-test? Was it an ANOVA? What type of ANOVA? Because there's various kinds.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not a mathematician. I just use the standard.
So how did you perform this? How did you perform this equation if you're not a mathematician and you didn't know what formula you were using to conduct it?
There's only three variables. You just plug them into the equation and you get a probability.
Right. So that would be an ANOVA if you're utilizing three variables. Couldn't have been a t-test because you would only have two groups. So which form of ANOVA did you use and how did you come to the determination that that was the accurate form of ANOVA?
Well, like I say, I'm not a mathematician.
Then how do you know that your results are reliable?
Because I went over these with a PhD in mathematics and he confirmed these probabilities.
How did he confirm the probabilities? How did you communicate to him what you were attempting to quantify?
I showed him the equation. He verified that that's exactly the probability equation you should use. I showed him the numbers that I calculated for what I showed him was the first 37 patterns, and we got like one in one e to the 29.
So what you're saying to me is that you showed an equation to a mathematician, and you asked him, "Is this an equation?" And he said, "Yes."
No, he looked at, I can give you the page. It's prob.php under my website. That's what I showed him. I showed him that page. We went over every inch of it in intricate detail. And
what was in your three different groups? So you had three groups that you were comparing against each other. How did you determine what went into the individual groups? And how did you translate the probabilities into numerical values and determine which groups they would go in order to assess? How did you wean out that you didn't have a sampling bias going into formulating the groups
before you
did the analysis variance? Yeah, sorry. I just love statistics. You go ahead.
No, I just finished. I wasn't paying attention. I just finished playing a game of chess. I just had a separate question here for Alvin, and that on your website, it says that you feel confident in saying the United States Supreme Court will rule in favor of your theory in government-owned public schools with the condition that teachers are not allowed to say that God did it, but can only prove mathematically that the 37 primary patterns of Genesis 1-1 are extremely mathematically significant. What on earth makes you think the United States Supreme Court would not only rule in your favor, but would rule at all? This is not a decision that the United States Supreme Court makes.
Well, if it ever got to the point where we were putting it in schools.
Well, if you ever got to the point where you could answer any Shannon's questions about probability, then you might be able to get to a point where it should be put in schools. But no. So you need to take this to mathematicians and statisticians, not just the one. But if you can't answer any of Shannon's questions, and I managed to play an entire game of chess while you were avoiding those questions, I think we can probably move on and never talk about this again until you show up with more than a web page that nobody knows about or cares about.
Yeah, you at least should know which mathematical formulation you used and why. Anybody who does any sort of statistical analysis in the scientific fields, and I'm certainly no expert, but anybody who does these forms of analysis would at least know what the name of the equation that they used was. It shouldn't have been a surprise to you when I reamed them off, right? Like, you had to select it for a reason.
It's all right. When you find more and you get more actual like expertise and knowledge behind this, that's not just you saying, "Oh, I talked to a mathematician," then cool. Then you can probably, instead of calling into a local atheist show with two people who aren't mathematicians and yet one of them who completely blows both me and you away on understanding of statistical analysis, instead of calling into there, maybe you could submit it to somebody who would review it rather than just hoping you could promote it with bullshit.
Right. Yeah. So maybe like go figure out which one you did and then why you did it, how you quantified your groups, how you created the hypothetical construct around them, what you utilized as a control in order to place the values in each group, how you translated them to a value, and why you chose a specific statistical analysis in order to assess them. And then maybe we can have a chit chat then, because right now I feel as though we're just going to be talking about what you think about an outcome that you can't even explain how you got to in any sort of effective, quantifiable way.
By the way, for the person in chat who asked, I won the game.
All right. Thank you, Alvin. Have a good rest of your day.
Okay.
Sorry, I love statistics so much. All right, Matt, you still want me to pick?
Oh, yes. Matter of fact, I might get four or five more chess games in before this is over. If somebody's going to call in with statistical analysis, trust me, I ain't saying a fucking word.
I just love, like, I love stats. Because yes. More people should study stats because that's how we determine the outcome of most scientific studies, right? Yeah. So if you can understand statistics, like inferential and analytical statistics, just a little bit better, you're not going to be duped by the fake ones as easily, right? So yeah. When somebody has a question, somebody comes to you with a claim like that, if you have just even like a base knowledge of inferential and analytical statistics, you can easily kind of dismantle what they're saying when they don't even know the name of the statistical. And that blows my mind because you need to be able to understand which statistical analysis best fits your data sets. And if you don't know, like, how did he do statistical analysis if he didn't come to a determination of which one best fit his data set? And he couldn't even explain how he quantified his data set. That stuff frustrates me. But anyway, I'll move on. You start your next chess game. I'm going to take the next call. We're going to talk to
By the David. Way, I'm gonna send you a link to his website since you like the statistical stuff so much.
I don't know if I want to, but yeah, kind of. Morbidly, I do kind of want to look at it.
It's in the host and crew chat.
Is it in the host chat?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll have a look. Not right now though, because I want to pay attention to David. So
yeah, I do too. I'm not playing chess. I just did that for Alvin because I've talked to Alvin more than I want to.
This was my first Alvin call. So And now it's David's turn. Hi, David. What would you like to talk about today?
Hello. So basically what I wanted to talk about, I've been a fan of the show for like 10 years.
Oh.
Basically how I came across the show in 2010, I got diagnosed with bipolar in 2010 and I was psychotic and manic and everything and kind of going off the deep end. And so I started to think that a celebrity was the Antichrist. So I was like obsessively, searching the internet for things like that, and I came across the Atheist Experience because the day that I was at my most psychotic was the 666th episode of the Atheist Experience, and that's how I came here. And I called in to just kind of talk about like, because I am a theist, but I feel like my reasons for being a theist aren't really grounded in reality, and I just wanted to talk about that.
Okay.
So first of all, I'd also like to point out that today is the 1200th show.
Wow.
I have no idea how many I've been on, but 666 was a long time ago. I remember doing it.
Yeah, I do too. And I remember the background you guys had. It was like there was like a bunch of fire and everything. And that was kind of like what I really didn't even know what the Antichrist was at that time. And somehow I just kind of had this like bizarre religious delusional experience and, thought that this celebrity was the Antichrist and everything. And basically what I came to the conclusion was a few years later was that I'm the second Adam that they talked about in the Bible. And I just know that there's really no good reason to believe it. I've talked to, a psychiatrist, to talk to like a pastor and everything. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of want to like move on from this part of my life.
So you're Jesus?
Okay. Well, no, I don't think that I am. I know that
Jesus is the second Adam.
Jesus was the second Adam. Yeah. Right. I know. And So I thought that I had talked to Jesus when I was in the psych ward in 2014. And he told me the guy's name that basically that I thought was the Antichrist. And I actually talked to him on Facebook, the guy. He's this guy that lives in Missouri.
So you understand these are all delusional thoughts now though, right? That you were in a manic state potentially at these times and these thoughts are, it sounds like you recognize that, but are you having trouble differentiating or drawing a really tangible line between your belief systems? Because it sounds to me like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that you have a belief system that teaches you that these sorts of supernatural things are true, are inevitable, and are likely to be prevalent. So that when you are in these sort of manic states or potentially delusional or psychotic states, and you see things that aren't necessarily comporting to reality, that you have a reference point with your theistic view to validate them. And that makes it more difficult for you to discount them because you see them as a possible and likely potentiality anyway, because of your belief structure. So that makes it more difficult for you to say, okay, I know this isn't tethered to reality. Definitively know that this isn't tethered to reality as a result of that belief set, and that's a struggle.
Right.
Is that fair?
I mean, it's basically like, yeah, it's fair. I mean, it's basically, I went to church. We weren't a super, super religious family growing up, but I did go to church for about 7 years growing up, from when I was about 7 to 14. And then when I was about 14, I just kind of became pretty depressed and just kind of lost interest in a lot of things, including church. And then I think I kind of got a little bit better when I was in college and things like that, and started to feel better. And then right when I graduated college was right when I got sick for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I was abused really severely when I was a young kid by my uncle and grandpa. And I kind of feel like, you know, just because I have all these religious delusions and everything, that I may be living in some kind of an afterlife. Like I did something in a past life to deserve to be abused really severely. I don't really think that that makes any sense, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Before
you continue, I think that this is really important. No one deserves abuse. Whatever abuse that you suffered, I want you to hear this message loudly and clearly. If you hear nothing else today than anybody else says to you about anything regards to this, no one deserves abuse. No one. No one deserves abuse. So whatever cycle you may go through that causes you to attempt to rationalize why abuse happen to you. And most abuse victims do go through stages like that, where they attempt to rationalize what they may have done to elicit abuse. So they do that for rational reasons. So I want you to know that too. One of the rational reasons to do that is to attempt to avoid future abuse by trying to identify any behavior that you may have had, rational or otherwise, that potentially put you in a scenario where you were able to be abused. So that's something that lots and lots and lots of many, potentially all abuse victims go through, trying to figure out future avoidance of abuse because you don't want to be in that scenario again. One of the things that happens quite frequently is this feeling as though, okay, I've identified why this happened to me and it's because I did X. Now, it sounds to me that you have disorganized patterns that you've recognized and have been diagnosed with bipolar. So there's an extra level of validation that you would have to go through that would be incredibly difficult because you're prone to disorganized or delusional or manic thoughts. But I do want you to have this as a mantra, and I think it's an incredibly important one. And I want other people who may be in a situation like you to hear this as well. No one deserves abuse. Abusers cause abuse, not victims.
Yes.
So I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think that's a very, very important thing for you to take away. And I wanted to make sure that I hammered that home as well as I could.
No, I don't think you interrupted me. I agree with what you're saying. It's just hard because, you know, when I was in church growing up and everything, they would talk about original sin, and they would say things like, you know, that a baby had sinned because they had cried and things like that. And I had a pastor or a Sunday school teacher when I was in elementary school say that that less than 100 people in the history of the world will get into heaven. And I realized, you know, that made it pretty unlikely that I would. He said that him and his wife would, but that none of his kids would. And, you know, at the time it sounded pretty shocking. And I'm like, wow, I'm probably not going to get in. And now I look at it and I'm like, it'd be horrible even if anybody went to hell, even if it was like, you know, maybe 1% of the population and they were really bad, it's still an unjust punishment for, you know, finite crimes for an infinite amount of torture. I don't think it would be a fair punishment at all.
The good news, though, David, is that we have no good reason to think that there's any hell to be saved from and any heaven to be saved to, and that in the absence of evidence to think these things are likely, what's always in our best interest, even if we were to be leaning towards a notion of a heaven or hell, is for us to work together to make the world that we definitely live in a better one. And that means making sure that people get treatment for mental health conditions, making sure that people, as Shannon has pointed out, understand that nobody is deserving of abuse. And by the way, a religion that begins with you were deserving of abuse from before you were born or from the instant you were born is as repugnant as anybody who's trying to shovel that into your head to make you feel as if you deserve less or you are somehow inferior. I'm first of all, I don't know I'm curious as to what's bothering you currently that prompted this call, because I think Shannon's done a great job of hitting on all the things and providing comfort. It's just, was there something specific that happened very recently that made you, I don't know, worried about it again?
So I mean, I'm giving a couple examples of things, patterns that I've seen that I believe to be, you know, either the devil talking to me or God talking to me. And I still believe things like that happen, which is why I still consider myself a theist. But I really feel like, you know, watching the Atheist Experience over the years has really helped me. I honestly think that you guys are a cause for good, because it does take my mind off of it. And I feel like, I mean, I really mean that, because it is such a weight on my shoulders.
Let's see if we can get to that helped. Because David, what you're saying is you still believe that there are things like God and a devil and that they might be doing stuff and they might be doing something behind the scenes. What reason do you have to think that is likely or happening?
Well, for example, Matt, I'm based on something you said earlier in the show, you said something about, you were talking to the one caller about something like if you got in a car and you were driving and all the cars got out of the way.
Yes.
Things like that have happened in my life.
Give me an example, because I specifically came up with something that mirrored the Exodus story. So what example like that has happened to you that we could possibly address?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of things just like with numbers, like 666 and things like the second time I got really manic, I had 666 Facebook friends and I was posting a bunch of crazy stuff on Facebook.
Okay. But
the first time I got,
that's not the
666
David. The example that I gave about the Israelites was about praying and having a ball of light show up and clearly lead you somewhere. What you're talking about is something bad happened while I simultaneously had 666 things. Are you aware that the number of the beast may not even be 666?
It might be 616. Yeah, I know that.
Yeah. And so now we've got two options. So are you going to give credit to God or the devil every time something happens and you can tie it to 666 or 616?
Yes.
Okay. So now you're admittedly attributing two different things, only one of which can be true, to the same source when there's no evidence that the source exists.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would have to acknowledge that you are now willing to give twice as much credibility to something that may just be coincidence only because you don't know which of the two potential numbers is right. What if there's a third number that could be the potential? And by the way, we don't just have to worry about 666 and 616. You can find significance in 2 and 3 and 7 and 13 and 12 and 40 right. and 20. And holy crap, is there any number that's not going to be able to be tied to something significant? And if there is a God or a devil, why is it that we don't have good evidence for this? Why is it that we just have to wait until, like, I don't have 666 followers anymore. So does that mean when I get to 666,000 followers that's suddenly significant?
Well, that's sort of what I called in. That's sort of what I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, I am in a better place. I haven't been sick in 6 years. I'm getting married next month and I'm feeling better about everything.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, I look at something like prayer, for example. Me and everyone I know could pray a billion times every day or 1,000 times every day for the rest of their life for something that's impossible to happen, like a really young person coming back from the dead or something like that, and it would never happen. Everybody in the world.
It's weird that impossible things never happen because of prayer, eh? Strange.
Yeah.
Not right.
Anyway.
I mean, if I prayed one time for something that's inevitable, but it's also evil, like a person getting, like one random person in the world getting murdered today, that's always going to come true. So why is it that one?
Yes, somebody has been murdered while we've been on the air. So yes,
right.
And so you understand all that. So I don't get me wrong. I don't think we're going to like magically fix whatever's bothering you instantly over the next couple minutes. But every time I mention these things, you accept them. You seem to understand them, and yet you still maintain this belief, this connection, this pattern seeking part of your brain seems to be like revved up, but you seem to be aware of it. And so I'm just wondering what's keeping you from every time you feel like there's a God or a devil or whatever around, what's keeping you from asking yourself the same questions that I'm asking? Like, how do I tie these two things together?
Well, I do ask those questions. I mean, I really don't do anything. I don't really practice Christianity anyway. I don't really pray. I don't really read the Bible. I don't go to church. I do watch The Atheist Experience religiously, which is, you know, a terrible fun. I don't get anything out of it.
So you have some latent Christianity then, by the sounds of it. You have some latent Christianity, and you get a lot of false positives when you go into manic, delusional, or irrational states that may entrench. Like the way, can I brain nerd for a minute? Because I would like to brain nerd for a minute. So the way that, like when you go into manic states, if you're bipolar, if you're borderline, then you're, and you have it ingrained in you that these supernatural things are plausible and these sort of numerology things do happen, you're going to kind of note affirmation in a really substantial way because you've already got these memory nodes essentially activated in your mind saying that not only is this plausible, but this is what I'm seeing now. And because you have these memory nodes ingrained that say this is plausible, when you see something that is essentially fundamentally likely, and you've affirmed this, a coincidence, your rational thought process, like the prefrontal part of your brain, isn't activated as wholly. Like your emotional part of your brain is really heavily activated. Like that midbrain part of your brain is really activated at that point in time. So when you see something that seems like it might be affirmation, you're not prone in that state to even attempt to talk yourself out of it. You're prone to fixate upon it. So when you come out of that state, your brain is now primed by that fixation to think that that's equivalent to affirmation. So because you spend so much time fixating on it, it's become ingrained in those memory nodes. So you've built more memory nodes, you've built more connections, and those connections to you seem like affirmation. And they seem like highly emotionally charged affirmation, which is the type that will convince us the most. So when you come out of it and have time retrospectively to look at it and carefully analyze, you can say to yourself rationally, okay, that could just be a coincidence that I had 666 followers while I was in the manic state and I was fixated on it. But that doesn't get rid of, because brains don't work like this, it doesn't get rid of that emotional clicking that you had that made you feel like, okay, this is it. Like I'm really discovering something here. This is affirming things to me. That part isn't necessarily connected as strongly to the rational part of your brain. It takes a little bit more to override. So you need to find a way, since this sounds like it's potentially an unhealthy cycle to you, to learn to figure out a way to disconnect or analyze that emotional component as well, or at least understand what it is so that you can work towards it. And it sounds to me like you're in a good spot now. So you likely have a therapist and you're medicated to a degree that, it's not an impediment on function like it used to be. And I'm so happy to hear that. And that's great. But that's a little bit of insight to the inside of your brain and why it may be easy for you to look at it from a logical perspective, but not disconnect yourself from an emotional perspective.
So let me ask this, because it might be useful. And I'm interested in what Shannon has to say. I have to try and think about, granted, I'm not in the position that you're in, because I don't have bipolar. I don't have any mental health issues apart from the anxiety that comes from being locked in my house since March. And probably some depression along with it, but nothing chronic that required that. So I had to try to think, what would I do? And I think that if I knew that I kept running across things that were likely to be coincidental, but I knew that I was prone to reading more into them, that all I would do is train myself to say, you know what? I don't know. And so each time I see one of those things, I can be like, wow, maybe that's suspicious. Maybe there's a supernatural event going on here, but you know what? I don't know. And as long as I'm willing in a position where I'm willing to acknowledge that this may have an explanation that I'm unaware of, or this may or may not be supernatural, but then I follow it up with immediately, I don't know. I'm recognizing that I don't have room here to actually make a conclusion. And so just file it away in the back and say, I'll make a decision about that when I actually have good evidence for it. I don't know if that works for you. I don't know if that's a good recommendation. That's the only way that I can think about it.
No, I mean, it definitely makes sense to me. And, you know, I've watched you talk so many times over the last 10 years. You know, I mean, I watch the show like every day. You know, I go back and watch shows that I've already watched before and things like that. And I get a kick out of it. It does help me, you know, to know, because I mean, when I talk to a pastor, he just wanted to read from the Bible and didn't really give any advice. But, you know, I think when I was younger, I felt like, you know, being a Christian would help me with it because it would make me less likely to commit suicide. And I feel like, I've always felt throughout my life since I was seven, that that's how I was going to go. Because I came really close when I was seven, I wrote a suicide note and everything. Because I was just getting tortured at my grandparents' house really, really bad by both of them. And, you know, and I wrote a suicide note and everything. And I, you know, I would hate to commit suicide and then realize that I actually go to hell.
I would hate for you to commit suicide at all, because what I know, what I'm convinced of is that if you commit suicide, you're unlikely to end up anywhere. And so you just threw away the one and only life that you know for sure that you've got. By the way, you'll be happy to know that donations while you were talking went from 665 to 670. We skipped right past 666. So there's nothing to worry about with this call.
There you go. Well, I'm really glad that you called.
Yes,
I am. And I hope that this was in some way helpful. And I'm glad that you're consistently listening. And I'm happy to hear that you're engaged in introspective skepticism. So thank you for that. And keep going down that line. And please be healthy and take care of yourself.
Yeah. And if you find yourself in need, you can always reach out to Recovering from Religion and the Secular Therapist Project if you don't have resources already in that area.
All right. We'll let you go, David. Thank you. Have a good rest of your day.
Thanks, David.
When I hear people who have mental health struggles also simultaneously struggling with religious ideation and that causing an exacerbation.
It's like we need a documentary that goes through all the harm. And granted, it would need to be like a 30-hour miniseries. All the harm that religions have done with regard to mental health issues, both with convincing people with mental health issues that they're possessed by demons, using exorcism and other non-science tools to fix a real issue, and then contributing to the marginalizing and the stigmatizing of people with mental health issues. I mean, religions, plural, across the board have been abominable when it comes to dealing with mental health issues. And I can't imagine being the type of person who's prone to that kind of thinking, more so than everybody else. I mean, we're all pattern seekers. We're all going to, hey, maybe there's something there. But to have your brain fuck with you all the time and go, maybe there is something there, and maybe it's because of you, and maybe you're the problem. And let's try and do everything we can to get people the help they need and as much compassion as we can extend. So,
yeah, no, I agree with that. It's something that people don't consider. They seem to get this pass, even though they make things worse. I have a whole channel. It's fundamentally kind of dedicated to that sort of thing. Yeah. All right. So we will go to, is this a Lord Methane? I just need to see. We're going to talk to Lord. Did I pronounce that right? Is it Lord Methane? Is that what it is?
Unless you're in the UK, that'd be methane.
I prefer methane.
Methane. Okay. All right. Hi. Welcome, Lord Methane. What would you like to talk about?
Yeah, but I didn't call to talk about my authority on climate change today. I called to speak about what the first caller was talking about.
Okay.
As from my authority in the Pantheon, on the biblical theme of blood atonement.
Okie dokie.
Wait, was the first caller talking about the biblical theme of blood atonement?
I don't think so. It was child sacrifice, I think.
He talked about child sacrifice.
Oh, okay. And you're counting that as blood atonement?
Evidently.
Because I'm not convinced that sacrificing children to Moloch was in fact the same as blood atonement, that it may have been a different sort of appeasement. But in either case, go ahead. It has nothing to do with the Bible.
Well, it's just
maybe I'll get the point test this time.
To the blood atonement.
I'm sorry, what?
Human sacrifice is the alternative to the blood atonement.
Well, under which model? That's not under a biblical model. I'm not aware that we have a justification for why worshipers of Moloch were doing this, but go ahead.
Well, But you do agree that the Blood Atonement is the main theme that runs throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament, right?
No.
You don't?
No, I don't think that Blood Atonement is the... I don't think that Blood Atonement is the main theme that runs throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament. I think the Old Testament is a chronicle of a people who couldn't live up to anything that God wanted ever, and an inept God that kept trying to get them to love him. Oh, you don't love me? Let me do this. You don't love me? Let me do this. Why won't you love me? I'm going to punish you. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. The notion of atonement exists, sure, throughout, but I don't think it's the main story throughout. But even if it is, it doesn't matter. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, well, Jesus was the blood atonement. The Jews practiced the blood atonement. And all the way from Adam, the blood atonement was portrayed throughout the Bible.
I'm wondering what point you're trying to get to, because you do realize that I know the Bible pretty well, and that the caller who called in earlier about child sacrifice, I corrected them. So what are we trying to get to?
I'm happy that you did that, because you're right on that one.
I'm right on all of it. What are we getting to? What point are we trying to get to?
I'm trying to get to it. So
okay, you do realize this show's over like in less than 35 minutes. So what point did you want to get to?
Well, I'm trying to go to the scripture of Leviticus 27:29.
Why? What is it going to prove?
Well, apparently at least half of your audience thinks that human sacrifice was something that was portrayed in the Bible as acceptable. And you said it wasn't, but apparently a bunch of them still believe that.
Well, there are verses that are disputed and played up as that, but no, there's no express call for child sacrifice like that as an atonement. But if you called in just to correct other people who aren't the people you're talking to,
no,
we don't need to do that.
No, I called before I even knew that lady was on.
Well, then what would you like to talk about? Because this is all a waste of time right now. What did you call about?
No, it's not a waste of time, because this is the main theme that runs throughout the entire Bible.
Okay, I don't give a fuck. I only care whether or not it's true. What point were you trying to get to?
The point is that human sacrifice was never accepted in the Bible.
Correct. I don't give a shit.
When it spoke,
if you don't raise a point that is relevant for me and Shannon to address, I'm going to hang up on you. This is not a show for you just to call in and preach.
This isn't preaching. When it spoke about the ban that people were condemned or devoted, the devoted things that were killed, the devoted things were the things that were in transgression against the law, and that's the same thing as...
You are boring me and the audience to tears. What point would you like to make, please, sir? This is not just a venue for you to call in and preach, either defend a position and engage with the hosts on the show, or piss off.
The point is that the Bible never... accepted. God never accepted a human sacrifice. Never.
Hang up on this jackass who is now doing this of what I already fucking acknowledged before he called in. And you, sir, are a liar, because you said you called in before you knew what that person was calling about. And yet I gave you every opportunity to talk about what you initially called in for. And instead you only addressed what a previous caller said, which had already been corrected. You wasted your one shot. Please go and pray to your God and ask forgiveness for failing miserably to offer any sort of relevant defense of the faith. Next.
And also, I'm not sure if I entirely agree, because what about Jephthah? Like,
Jephthah was not a command to sacrifice child. That was a deal Jephthah made with God, saying, I'll make a deal. Yeah. And he held it up. Now, God accepted that child sacrifice. Right. Because
but God didn't ask for it. Jephthah said, I'll kill whoever comes out my door first. And his daughter wandered out his door.
Meanwhile, what could have been really interesting there is that is that the whole binding of Isaac story, as I pointed out many times, requires that Abraham expected that God could and would ask for him to kill his son.
Yes.
Otherwise, there's no reason to reward his obedience. And so the caller is wrong about what the Bible implies. He's just... Mm-hmm. pedantically correct about what it expressly says, and it couldn't be any less relevant to what's going on the show.
All right, fair enough. All right, we'll move on to the next one.
Yay.
So we'll talk to Lee next. Oh, I think I'm bringing Lee up. Hello, Lee. Hi, Lee. Welcome to the Atheist Experience.
How are you?
Hi. Hello.
How are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you? What would you like to talk about?
I'm doing pretty good. Well, the purpose of my call first of all, is cathartic for me, as mm-hmm. well as I believe it's relevant and can help people, especially the gentleman earlier who called about mental health issues. I'm going to be telling my story. I'm a member of the Clergy Project. And okay. So I hope this will be beneficial to your show. I grew up in Texas. I was mentally, physically, and sexually abused as a child. Mm-hmm. And so I had very similar experiences with the previous caller. And so I grew up, graduated high school because I blamed myself for all that abuse. And I came to the point to where I thought where I was actively planning on killing myself. And I went to my grandfather's house, and he was the only person in my family who I knew who loved me. I actually went to say goodbye to him. And he was a Christian. And that night he told me about Jesus. And that night I believed on Jesus. It changed my life overnight. I went home. I no longer had a longing to kill myself. I cut my hair, threw out my rock and roll album, started going to church. It just totally, totally changed my life. And there's no doubting the power of religion. It doesn't mean it's true. And so eventually, as I was a member of the church, I felt that God was calling me to preach. I found myself in seminary. After I graduated seminary, I became a youth minister at a small church in Texas, and then eventually believed that God was calling me to Asia as a missionary. I went to Asia. I was a missionary in Asia for 12, almost 13 years. In that time, I started two churches, and the country I was in was a communist country, so I had to do mission work underground. And so I started two churches, trained many ministers to go out to different villages and to do the same. Well, I eventually began to question my faith through a series of events that happened to me. The first one was a woman in our church. One day she was at home, and she was reading out of the book of Acts chapter 16, verses 7 through 9, about how Paul wanted to go preach in Asia, but God forbade him to go because he wanted him to go to Rome. When she read that, she immediately got on her motorbike, rode to my house, knocked on my door, and I opened the door, and she had tears in her eyes. And this is a direct quote that she said in Vietnamese, in Asian. She said, why didn't God allow Paul to go to Asia? If he did, then maybe my grandfather and family could have been saved before they died. I comforted her, and I told her that God probably sent someone to Asia, without knowing any evidence of this. But things like this is what makes Christianity so detrimental to other cultures, because the new religion that I introduced to this culture took her grandparents. They worshiped their ancestors in the country I was in.
Sure.
And so it's an exalted position. And so I, by what I taught them, took their relatives from an exalted position to now burning in hell. So thus the reason why, Paul not going to Asia bothered her so much. The country that I was in, less than 0.1% believed in Christ the way I believe the Bible taught about salvation. And so basically, based upon just on those who would pass away each month, nearly 55,000 people each month in one country alone were dying and going to hell. And I would kind of justify it in my mind. Jesus said, wide is the way to destruction and narrow is the way to paradise. But still, with the story with the previous woman and the story with, just the sheer numbers began to put questions in my mind. And then I had a neighbor who was right next door to me who I witnessed to, and I would tell him if he didn't believe in Jesus, he was going to go to hell. And I would observe him, and he was a Buddhist man. He loved his family. He worked hard. And I would observe him with his family as he would go to work every morning. Eventually I began to think, do I really believe that this good, moral man is going to hell just because he believes differently than I do?
Sorry to interrupt you, Lee. I appreciate the power and importance of deconversion stories, but is there something that you would like to discuss with us or ask us directly?
The reason for my call is that when I called and talked to the call screener, he said that I could briefly tell my story, which I'm trying to do.
Okay. We have a bunch of other callers on the line, and I do think it's very important to hear these types of stories, but I don't want to rush you along.
Okay. Well, I'll just end it this way. Basically, you know, I went to Asia as a missionary to save mm-hmm. them. They ended up saving me from ignorance. And I really believe that people mm-hmm. can relate to that, because, you know, there are many people, especially the earlier caller, who's struggling with particular aspects of belief. And so I just wanted to call in and hope that that can help people through their journey.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm glad you called in, and I'm glad you found your way out and that you're in a healthy place now. And thank you very much for calling to share the story with us. And I apologize for interrupting you, but we do have like a laundry list of callers waiting to discuss things with us.
Oh, no. So that's fine.
Thank you so much, Lee. Have a good rest of your day. Thank you for sharing with us.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, Matt, am I still holding the wheel, or do you have one that you in particular you like? We have a lot in there.
You are the head motherfucker in charge for the rest of the show.
I'm the bad bitch. Okay.
No, you get to say that. I don't.
Okay.
We're up to like jokes Matt can't tell, the Seth Meyers spinoff.
Morals. Okay. I saw one that said morals. We're going to talk to Lester. You know how much I like this. Let's see if your Zen can handle Lester. Hi, Lester.
I can handle it because I don't have to say anything. You got it covered. Hey. You and I had this talk with Scott.
What would you like to talk about, Lester? Morals and stuff. What's up?
Yeah. Well, I wrote, I don't think you can see that, but
the call screener thing, it says here that you're saying, if the foundation for naturalist moralist is well-being, then why are they also pro-choice? Now, that's easy, because there's a person there who we believe no one has the right to force them to remain pregnant against their will. And so I'm going to support their right to defend themselves against an invader.
Yeah. So if you're the foundation for your objective moral values is well-being, that means it applies to everything. Like I called last time, that's what you told me.
Yeah, the problem is that I just answered your question and you just ignored it and went on to say whatever you were planning to say. See, at worst, when we're talking about someone who's pregnant, at worst, there would be two individuals whose rights would be in conflict. I don't think that's the case, but even if it were, does a five-year-old have a right to use its mother's body without her consent?
No.
Well, okay.
No.
Then why are you wanting to give special rights to a fetus? Why does the woman's rights get trumped by something that is less human than the five-year-old, or less?
Less human.
Oh, actually, yes, there is such a thing as less human, provided you come up with the right context. But I immediately retracted it even before you said it, and the notion that it does not matter whether it's a five-year-old or a five-day or five-week-old fetus, it should not have the right to use someone else's body without their consent, and that's why I'm pro-choice.
The thing is, abortion goes up to 23 weeks.
That's, yes. Okay. I apologize, Lester. I don't mean to treat you like you're stupid, but if I said all the way from conception up to a five-year-old child, hell, up to a 50-year-old, no person, no matter what their age, gets to use somebody else's body without their consent. So what difference does it make if it goes up to 20 some odd months or weeks? Sorry.
Because you shouldn't take away their life. Because
now, you're saying that, but it's not the, okay. You're not listening and you're not providing anything in response other than just an assertion that we shouldn't take a life. Do you agree with me?
A 50-year-old has life.
Do you if there's a five-year-old that is going to die without a transplant from their mother, do they have the right to force their mother to give them a transplant?
No.
Correct. So that results in that child dying, doesn't it? The mother refusing the transplant results in the kid dying, correct?
No, because there could be other.
No. If I set up the scenario where a transplant from the mother is the only thing that will save this child, and that's it, and the mother says no, that child's going to die, right?
Well, you can't do that.
What do you mean I can't do that? I just fucking did it. I set up that scenario to make it directly analogous.
It doesn't mean it applies to real life. It doesn't mean
it does apply to real life. There are circumstances where someone's going to need a transplant right now, where there's no time to wait, where they can't get on a list, where they're going to die without it, and where the immediate family member, the parent, doesn't matter. pick anybody. The person who needs the transplant has no right to force anyone anywhere to give them the transplant, correct?
Oh, I agree. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Then that's why I'm pro-choice.
I have a question. So you're saying you're pro-choice because that they can't force that person to use their body, right? The mother?
Yes.
But your foundation is well-being. So
yes.
How is the life better than like using the body? Like you
Start over. What's the question? Because you cut out and I don't want to miss your question.
Oh, sorry. Why would you go for killing a baby instead of...
Abortion is not the right to kill.
Different choice.
Abortion is not the right to kill. Abortion is the right to terminate a pregnancy. The fact that this results in the death of the fetus is a fact of biology. It does not a right to kill. And late term, by the way, results in a delivery. If you want to terminate an abortion late and there's not medically extenuating circumstances, it's called a delivery. Abortion is the termination of a non-viable fetus, period.
But it's living, right?
It doesn't matter if it's living. The 5-year, I don't know why this is so hard for you, Lester. Whether it's living in the womb or living outside the womb and writing poetry and curing cancer, it does not have a right to use someone else's body without their consent, period. In anything that you say, to the contrary, anything you say to the contrary means that you are advocating that fetuses should get not human rights, not equal rights, but special rights. And you need to come up with a justification for why they should get special rights so that you, as an outsider, can force a woman who you have no business being involved with or saying shit about ever to carry a fucking fetus to term and give it special priority. So please make your case for why fetuses should be above the law.
Hey, man, I mean, there's no reason to get angry, but...
Yes, there is. Oh, yes, there is. You obnoxious little shit. And I'm going to let
there's reason
Shannon
to get angry.
Explain to you why.
Reason to get angry. So I've been quietly sitting here listening to you fine gentlemen debate why somebody should have the rights to my body. That's what I've been quietly sitting here listening to for the past however long this has gone on, is you making a case that whatever is residing inside of me, and I am in possession of a uterus and also in possession of a human child. I've had a miscarriage. I've mourned the loss of a pregnancy that I did want. So, and I gave birth to a child who is very much wanted, who I love and adore. And I've never had an abortion, but I am very much pro-choice for a lot of the reasons that Matt stated. One of the primary things that you have to take into consideration is that this child is separate from me, right? Separate from me. This is, the child is not me. The child is residing within my body. So functionally, what you're saying is that somebody else that isn't me has the rights to my body. That's what you're saying. Somebody who is not yet sentient, potentially, has the rights to my body and not me. And this isn't something that you're ever going to have to come across. And I am so sick to goddamn death of listening to dudes debate back and forth about what I should be doing and whether or not a fetus, a zygote, an embryo, whatever, has rights to my body and whether or not they should be the ones who determine that's the case. How about this? I've decided that every time somebody needs a blood transfusion to survive, you have to provide it to them if you are a match to them, because if you do not, more people will die. And if somebody needs a liver, you can go without portions of your liver. You can donate a portion of your liver every time somebody needs it. Otherwise, they might die. What I'm saying to you right now is that removing a zygote, a fetus, an embryo from my body is just relinquishing my permission for it to have access to my body. The same way that you have the free opportunity to not donate a portion of your liver, to not donate blood, I have the free opportunity to say, I don't donate my uterus to you. The end. Not up to you. Up to me. Period. We good?
Hey, can I talk?
No.
No. I had a lot of things to say.
No, you really fucking don't. Because it's clear that you did not listen to Shannon in the slightest. If you come out the side of what Shannon just said with the notion that you have a lot to say, you weren't paying attention, and we're done talking to you. Goodbye.
See you later. Have a good day. I look forward to all of the pieces of your liver that you're donating and all of the blood that you're going to donate every week. And that everybody that makes these arguments, like somebody has a right to my body, but nobody has a right to your body, right? Like you don't have to relinquish components of your body. You don't have to donate components of your body to people who need it to survive. People die on transplant lists every day. People die because they don't get blood transfusions every day. Why aren't you in line? Why aren't you a blood donor? Why aren't you giving away your liver? Why aren't you donating one of the kidneys if you don't need it? Because you're not consistent. Controlling what I do is important, but you're not willing to even do something that isn't going to kill you. None of that's going to kill you. That's something that you can do that's going to save a life, that's going to sustain a life of somebody who's currently cogent and sentient and walking around. But they don't see the analogy. Like, they don't understand.
Yep.
Or can't conceivably comprehend that it's fundamentally the same thing that you're asking. I'm saying you don't have access to my body. Whoever you is in this scenario, don't have access to my body to use as you will. I'm the one who's in charge of that.
Yep.
Same thing that you're saying. Sorry, I get fucking worked up.
No, it's fine.
I should have swear.
You can swear all you want. There's somebody else who's like, why didn't you let him speak? Because he wasn't listening. This isn't a show for somebody just to come in and present what they think. So one of the things is the question that I'd asked him, which would have been interesting to perhaps get an answer to at some point, is what does he think would give him the right to tell Shannon that she has to stay pregnant? The problem is, before I got to that question, Shannon was like
angry,
all out of fucks to give. because here's the thing. I've debated
this
topic.
Perilous and low on fucks, yes.
I've debated this topic before, and I debated it as an atheist against a woman who was anti-choice and an atheist, but she was primarily anti-choice because of her Catholic bringing. I've done this debate. But before I ever did the debate, I talked to a bunch of people, and I talked to a bunch of women particularly, saying, hey, what are the optics of this like? You know, I get it. People want me to debate. I know what I'm doing here. My wife's an expert, or my ex-wife now is an expert on this, and there'll be plenty of prep. But if it's going to look bad for me, a dude, to be doing this. And in that case, they were like, no, you go. This is absolutely right. Kate, you know, you've got a woman who's anti-choice and you're pro-choice, and we'll do it up. And we'll do it. The debate we did the debate. But the thing is, if you agree that the 5-year-old does not have right to Shannon's body, and you think that a fetus does, then you're creating special rights, and you need to, first of all, justify those and codify and enshrine those, because nowhere in the law of the United States, at least, is it codified and enshrined that a fetus gets special rights. That's what they're trying to do. Anyway.
If there's a part of your body that can be used to sustain or save somebody else's body, fundamentally the argument is you are absolutely required to provide that. But the only circumstance where they seem to feel like that's the case is when it comes to the uterus. The rest of it is my freedom. Anyway, whatever.
Somebody just suggested that you don't win a debate by emotional outbursts. This isn't, if you think what happens on this show is debate, I don't know how to help you, because there's discussions, but this is not a structured debate. This is an exchange about ideas. And by the way, debates are theater. And this is from somebody who debates for a living. The person who has the best argument, the best evidence, isn't necessarily the one to win all the time. But all right, where are we going now, Shannon?
All right. So let's see. We can talk to, we'll talk to Mike. Mike's
we got like 11 minutes.
Uh-oh. Hi, Mike.
How are you guys?
What would you think? Hi. Welcome to the Atheist Experience. Hello, my friend.
I'm in the show a little bit later than what I'd like to. It kind of saturated the airtime with a lot of meaningless dribble that you guys had to put up. My sympathies. I'm a theist, but I'm not necessarily a theist from the tradition that you might suspect. I'm a theist in the tradition of Spinoza's God, who believes that God is a transcendent mathematical object.
That's not Spinoza's God.
Spinoza's God, absolutely. It categorically is. I've read the Ethics. I'm an experimental philosopher and systems theorist. Spinoza's God is a transcendent mathematical object defined in geometric axioms. Now,
Since
about 2013.
I'm just going to go play chess then, since evidently I'm not fucking needed to even allow a clarification on this. But go ahead. I'm going to go play chess.
God's existence. God's existence was proven in 2014.
No, it wasn't.
For university. Well, actually, the name of the study is Automating Gödel's Ontological Proof of God's Existence with Higher Order Automated Theorem Provers.
I'm sorry, but the type of God that you're arguing for isn't something that I'm interested in. It's not anything that's real. It's not an agent. It doesn't apply to any religions. It's the type of thing that people look into and they see beauty in the mathematics and want to call it a God, but it's not a God in any classical sense of a God.
Let's see how many losses against me you can continue racking up.
I'm sorry?
How many losses against you?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you when you talk drivel. What did you say?
Okay, let's see how many losses against me you can rack up, because God's existence was produced by Kirk Gödel doing an automated theorem prover of Gödel's ontological argument, which was fact-checked by a computer science lab by Berlin's Free University, found to be mathematically proven. So the statement itself that there is no existence for the evidence for the existence of God in the form of a rational argument is categorically false. It's peer reviewed. It's in the papers.
No, it's not. I'm sorry, but there's no variable that you can associate with God. And if you're arguing for Spinoza's God is a metaphorical God that is about math, as you were right pointing out, that I was going to clarify, but is not in fact an actual agent entity thinking agent entity that is the God at the corner of religion, which is why you called in to say, we've proved Spinoza's God, but Spinoza's God isn't a God.
You said there's no variable that God could actually be associated with.
I'm saying that you can't put a formula that includes God into mathematics.
We can't hear you.
Your statement contradicted.
No, my statement does not contradict itself.
No, allow me to explain it.
I'm not interested in your explanations because, as I told you, I'm not interested in Spinoza's God. I'm interested in the God that people actually believe in, pray to, legislate on behalf of. I'm not interested in a metaphorical, mathematical abstraction.
Spinoza's God. Okay, I'll make the argument. How about this? I'll make the argument and allow you to try to shoot.
How about this? I just drop the call and move on because I've told you repeatedly I'm not interested in the thing that you're trying to prove.
Okay, right. So no, you're...
Bye.
So I don't understand I don't even... What?
So the short version is that Einstein famously said he believed in Spinoza's God. And what they're appealing to is not an actual agent, not a being, but the beauty and perfection and the order in the universe that is derived from mathematics. And so at the end of the day, you can prove that this order is there, but that doesn't make it a God. This isn't a God that anybody prays to. It's not a God that is a part of any religion. It's not it's a useless God proposition.
There's a lot of relationship with you. Yeah.
It is actually.
I know that.
It is actually.
The 2014 thing threw me off for a minute there.
It is actually the God that atheists used to point to so that they wouldn't have to say they were atheists. But I'm not wasting everybody's time on the show with a smug, mathematically knowledgeable prick thinking that he's proved God.
I wonder how many losses we racked up against him there.
All of them. There will be a video and a website really soon about how I am the dumbest son of a bitch ever. Because I don't know, and I wouldn't. It's.
Please. I thought I was the only one who had a website like that.
No. I have new ones popping up every day.
Thought I had the market cornered on the Matt Dillahunty.
Oh, look! Somebody website. In chat. Somebody in chat said I'm so full of himself. Time out. There.
Uh-oh.
Go ahead, Shannon.
Well, I'll add that to my website.
We only have like 5 minutes or so left to take calls, and there's tons of people waiting.
Yeah, we'll talk. Well, I'll just bring up Andrew then. Hi, Andrew. What would you like to talk about today?
Hi. How are y'all doing?
Good. Mostly confused. Yeah. Mentally exhausted. Yeah, what would you like to talk about, Andrew?
I'm calling because I was raised in Christianity, and I was always taught that. The third temple being built in Jerusalem is supposed to like herald the end of the world, you know, Jesus return, the rapture and all that stuff. And it's just like, I don't understand how to get away from that or if I should even give that any type of thought.
That's easy. If there's a prediction that's been sitting out there public that says, hey, we need to rebuild the temple in order to usher in this next age. Don't you think that that all the people who believe that are going to be working to rebuild the temple?
Yeah, and that's something I have to
Hang on. Hang on. Mm-hmm. If I order a steak medium rare and the steak shows up medium rare, does that mean that the waiter and the cook fulfilled prophecy?
I guess maybe no. I mean, the answer is no.
The answer is no. Mm-hmm. They didn't fulfill prophecy. If there's a prophecy and people are actively working to make it happen, it's utterly unimpressive that it happens. That's like saying, I predict Matt's going to hang up on somebody today. And then when I do, they say, see, I told you the only way I could have known that is if God told me it was going to happen. Well, no, that's not true for me hanging up on someone. And it's not true for building a third temple.
Yeah, I understand that. I guess, you know, it's difficult when that's something that's been so ingrained into you. And it's like, you know, you think about, like, I thought about what the example you just brought up. It's like, well, people can read it. And then of course they're going to build towards that. But then it's like, but could that possibly have any type of significance, like, whatsoever? I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's so hard to deviate from that once you've been...
Until you can prove that there's some significance to it, there's no reason to think there is, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Cool. So on that note, I guess we're going to move on because we're almost out of time.
All right.
Okay, well,
we've come to an agreement.
Yep, thanks.
Thanks, Andrew. Have a good day.
Thanks.
All right. We have 3 minutes left. You want to try to squeeze one?
We can try and squeeze one in.
There's several people there. Oh, Rick has proof for Jesus.
Oh.
Let's see if we can do that in 3 minutes. Hi, Rick. Prove Jesus. You have 3 minutes. Hello. Go.
I'll try to be as quick as I can.
Cool.
I believe what I believe is, cool. I think it's the most logical conclusion. I don't have any credentials other than I'm a human, and I have studied the Bible from front to back over and over. And I've studied people, paid attention to how they act and what they do my whole life. Okay. And I think that we don't even need a physical person to see this. We can look at the Bible itself.
How do you look at the Bible without a physical person?
Well, I'm just saying for sake of argument, because I know looking through history, I cannot verify that Jesus did in fact exist.
Me neither.
So, I mean, I'm just saying for sake of argument, just looking at the Bible for what it says, if Jesus was a real person, an honest person, he was born into the culture that he was born into, and he probably would have believed that he was the Son of God until he figured out that he wasn't.
Rick, why on earth do you believe that he would have thought he was the Messiah until he figured out he wasn't?
If you believed that you had powers, okay?
No. That's not what you said.
You're honest with yourself.
Rick.
Or Rick, he was God.
Rick. Oh, my God.
Sir?
You say he would have assumed he was Jesus. You're saying Jesus would assume that he was divine, and their reason for that is he had powers. Well, you don't know that he had powers.
No, sir. All I'm saying is that he would have believed what he was taught from birth in the culture that he was born into.
Maybe, maybe not, but do you think that the people are running around teaching people? Rick, I promise I'm going to let you fucking talk. Just let me ask my goddamn question. Do you think that people were teaching children that they were likely to be the Messiah in the first century?
I believe that if he was born as a son of David, then he probably was taught that from the leaders that were in control of him.
Okay, well, you have no evidence for this. And you have no evidence that he actually could do miracles.
I know, but please, I just want to look at what Jesus actually said.
You don't know what Jesus actually said. We have no way, Rick, we have no way of knowing. We have no, Rick, we have no way of knowing what Jesus actually said or if he actually said anything.
Right. It's all speculative, Rick. Like, this is all speculation. You're saying, well, if I assume this, then I can speculate this. So none of that's proof for anything. Like you said, you had proof that Jesus existed. And it seems like your proof is that there might have been someone named Jesus who was born into a culture where he was told he was the Son of God, who may or may not have powers. And if we look at the words he said, even though we don't actually know the words he said, because they're all second, third, fourth hand accounts way down the line, and there's no contemporary authors that we can prove even walked with him, if he even was a person that existed. So a lot of this doesn't have the foundation that you maybe think it does.
Meanwhile, the genealogy that you want to point I give up.
Oh, Rick, we are at the end.
No, I want to hear what Rick has to say. I would love to hear what Rick has to say. I'd just like to finish a fucking sentence without getting interrupted.
I was trying to say that all we can look at to try to see what was being said is the Bible.
Okay. Now, what can the Bible possibly prove, Rick?
If we're going to take the Bible at face value.
Why would you take the Bible at face value? Because that means that you're believing that miracles happened on face value. Is that reasonable?
Well, no.
Thank you.
No, I'm saying throw out the miracles.
Okay, throw out the miracles. What's left? Well, you don't have the genealogy because that was added after the fact. There's no reason to assume that Jesus existed. There's no reason to assume that he was taught that he was a son of David, because you can't even tell me whether he's a son of David through Mary or through Joseph, depending on which genealogy you're going to look at.
What I'm saying is that he realized that there was nothing to base it on. And
how do you know that, though? How do you know that? How can you conceivably know? You have no idea what I am realizing right now. How could you possibly take the leap that you can figure out what a Jesus thought?
I have absolutely no way of knowing.
And what's going on right
now? And why did you call him to waste our time? You have no proof, no way of knowing. You just have a suspicion, and you think we should take the Bible at face value. Well, I don't, because I don't need to take a book at face value when it advocates for slavery, misogyny, when it advocates for slaughter, for keeping the young virgin to yourself, when it advocates for all of these terrible things. I don't think it has anything important to teach me. But when you can't show that anything in it is true, that would be relevant to Jesus' story, and we take it at face value, then it looks like a fiction.
Can I please just look at one of the things that Jesus said?
How do you know that? Hang on. I will let you, Rick. How do you know what Jesus said?
One thing the Bible says Jesus said. Jesus.
No, Rick, Matt's asking you, how do you know Jesus even said that? How have you validated, verified, and how are you certain that the thing that you're about to say that Jesus said is in fact something that Jesus said? Rick, answer that question.
I don't. I'm saying that there is no way to validate it, but... Sure.
Well, now, what are
Rick,
we doing?
Rick, said, Rick, here's the next question.
Utility.
Rick, here's the next question. If you don't know that Jesus said it, why should we care? And do you think that we don't already fucking know what it says?
Because people are saying that they know what Jesus said and telling you to believe it.
Rick, yeah, do you know my history? Do you know that I walked down the aisle at the age of 5, that I was a Southern Baptist, that I was going to be a preacher, and that I know the Bible better than probably most of the people you've ever met in your fucking life?
Yes, sir. I do. Okay.
So whatever you're going to tell me, what is it that you want to tell me that you think Jesus said?
I'm just saying that I have a different way of looking at it.
I just ask you, Rick, please tell me what the fuck you think Jesus said that I need to hear.
Jesus said, no one knows the Father except for he who ascends to the Father. And to me, at point value, that just is saying that nobody knows until they die.
Okay. So how does this prove that Jesus was a person that existed and that Christianity is true? And that you even know he said it? You've already admitted you have absolutely no way of knowing if he even said the thing that you're utilizing as evidence that he was potentially someone who existed in Christianity might be true. So all of it seems like an exercise in futility.
Rick, you literally called in to say, I believe in this book, which I can't prove and which I fully acknowledge nobody should accept at face value, but I want to take it at face value.
I'm saying that we have to cut through the people that's forcing it down our throat. We have to cut through their bullshit and see what
Rick
can say.
Rick, nobody's forcing anything down our fucking throats. You don't have to care what the Bible says at all, and you shouldn't until there's somebody giving you a reason why it should be considered. You're the one that's accepting what they're shoving down your throat.
You're finding ways to comport.
I'm saying I have an alternate view.
No, you don't. You are accepting without evidence what they were trying to shove down your throat.
No, I'm saying in a world where you cannot know what is or is not true, all you can do is...
I don't live in that world, Rick. I live in a world where you can know what is or isn't true, and there are some things that you can't. And if you can't know them, you shouldn't believe them.
Can I ask you a question to see if I'm right?
Okay.
All right. If we go back to the original Greek, where it starts off with the whole, in the beginning was the word... All right, in the original Greek, was the word logos...
It wasn't Greek.
Go ahead.
I'm saying if it was logic, if that was the original meaning, it changes the whole story. If in the beginning was logic and reason, and it was overcome, Rick, by people who wanted to be in power...
Rick, have you studied Greek?
A little bit.
Okay.
Not enough to know anything, really, but...
Well, then maybe you shouldn't be respinning the whole Bible based on what you think maybe a particular passage might have suggested in Greek. Have you talked to the experts?
All of my Christian friends look at me like I'm crazy when I say the things I'm saying, and I have no other way of looking at it. I mean,
Rick, is it impossible for you to go, wow, I don't have enough information to believe this, so I'm not going to?
That's what I do every day.
You're an atheist.
I'm a theist or an atheist right now.
If you say that don't have
a definition, yes.
If you say that you don't believe, then you're clearly not a theist, right?
But all I'm trying to do is work with what we have to work with is all.
Okay.
Hang on.
Rick, listen to me. Let's say I gave you five numbers that came from my bank statement. Okay. Just five numbers. You don't know whether whether it's income. You don't know whether it's expenses, nothing. Five numbers. That's all you've got to work with. What can you do with that if that's all you've got to work with?
I have absolutely nothing I can do with that.
Right. And now if I hand you an old book that you don't have originals for, you don't know who wrote it, you can't investigate, you have no way of confirming anything that's in that book, what can you do with that?
All you can do is try to see...
No. I teed it up for you like this was T-ball by giving you an example of, with incomplete information, the only right answer is to say, I can't make anything of this yet. You then took your preferred incomplete information and tried to claim that there was something you could make of it after you've already acknowledged repeatedly that you can't. Do you not see that?
But that's what I'm saying is no. I'm saying that Jesus's message is nobody can know the mind of God until you die and go there.
But okay, all right, Rick,
I don't give Rick. A fuck what Jesus said.
Rick, if you're admitting that you don't even know if he said it and you have no way of verifying it and you are skeptical about it and you're teetering on the edge, I'd like you to really think about this question. Why are you fighting so hard to retain it? Why? Like, you're going through mental gymnastics that are very difficult to follow.
No,
like you, and it's all your interpretation of based on speculation. You have to recognize that everything that you're saying is your interpretation based on speculation. That is not something that's going to compel anybody else, nor should it, and nor should it be compelling to you, Rick. You understand that you're interpreting and then speculating off of that interpretation, right? You understand that, yes?
Yes, but I also...
Okay, how do you find truth? No, one sec. How do you get to truth interpretation and speculation? How do you get to truth through speculation and interpretation? Is that a viable way to get to something true, to find out what truth is? Is that what we should do, to find truth, to find out what's right, what's real, what's true?
No, what I'm...
Why are you doing it then? Why are you doing it then? Why? Because it's not to find truth. It's to retain a belief. You're doing this to retain a belief, not to find out what's true.
My paradigm changes daily. I really cry. I weigh the evidence. I look at things.
You've weighed no evidence in this conversation.
You have no evidence to weigh.
Okay.
All right. We have gone way past. Rick, I appreciate the conversation. And thank you for calling and have a good rest of your evening and give us a call back sometime. Let us know how the rest of the evidence weighing goes. And bye. Hey, we did it. Yay.
Did you finish your test game? I'm in the middle of one right now, actually.
Are you winning?
Yeah.
Cool. Very cool. Well, thank you for having me on again.
I'm always happy to have you on. I'm thrilled that you're here today. I'm, if you weren't here, I probably would have blown up a million times over, but I didn't.
Yay!
It was just frustrating because, you know, for those who are like, oh, well, you know, why would you do this? Okay, I'm fine with maintaining my zen, but watching people toil away in frustration with nothing is strange. Mm. It's like you get somebody, and this is why this is my life's work and why I will continue doing it forever, because look at that last caller. We have someone who admits, hey, I can't prove this. My entire paradigm is nobody's going to know till they're dead. And yet I'm going to say, Jesus said, nobody's going to know till they're dead. Okay, well, that's entirely circular because first of all, it doesn't matter what Jesus said until you show why it matters what Jesus said. Because if somebody else says, like what if he didn't call in to say, Matt said, you're not going to know till you're dead. He only cites Jesus saying you're not going to know till you're dead. I don't think you're going to know even after you're dead because I don't think you're going to have a brain. There's not going to be any way to know. But the caller didn't call in and say, oh, Jim Bob said we're not going to know until we're dead. It was always Jesus says we're not going to know until we're dead. But we don't know that. So really, it's the Bible records Jesus as suggesting that we're not going to know till we're dead. And that's only of use if you really already begin with the assumption that Jesus knows what the hell he's talking about and is giving accurate information. And so he doesn't realize it, but he's simultaneously saying, nobody can know till they're done, but I'm going to believe this anyway while I say I'm not believing it. This is the knot, the Gordian knot that religion twists minds into. And it's why it's so frustrating because I give a shit about people. I give a shit about what kind of world we live in. And if you allow religion to mire you in this, oh my God, what if I'm wrong? 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 Then, and we have that not only with this last caller, but with the bipolar person from earlier who's seeing patterns everywhere and wanting to judge all this. And it's like, what if I'm wrong? What if I'm wrong? What if I'm wrong? This is the harm that religion is doing. And the fact of the matter is we do not currently, and there's unlikely to be any hope of, have evidence or sufficient evidence to warrant believing this proposition. It's on that note though. Thank you, Shannon.
Thank you.
You're awesome. I'm gonna do an episode of The Line a little later, but there's other people here that I want to thank first. First of all, I'd like to thank chess.com for giving me a distraction. oh, wait, that's probably actually a promotion that I shouldn't do, but hopefully everybody will realize that it was all in fun. But
you can go to my website, mattdelahuntysucksallthetime.com/ yes. Shannon Q.
I suck all the time.
I'll be updating it after the show.
It's a brilliant thing of me sucking all the time.
All the time.
But what I will say is I get it. There are people out there who are dealing with this or struggling with it. They're looking at it in a different way. Not everybody who tried to call and get through got through. Not everybody who got through had something productive. But at the end of the day, we're still here week after week. I genuinely am trying to have conversations apart from Math Boy. If you're going to call in to do a mathematical proof of a nondescript, non-classical version of God, I genuinely do not give a flying fuck. Just don't even bother wasting the time because it's, you know, when you're putting in all your X's and everything else, it's not like there's a variable that is God. And what actually ends up happening is you talk about the probabilities of stuff, which Shannon would have been an expert for you to knock through probability boys stuff.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. It's really, somebody in chat just said, can Matt prove the existence of nothing? No, because nothing doesn't exist. If it exists, then it's something. It must have properties. These are simple questions that people think they're throwing out as if, oh, it's a gotcha. Hey, do you apply skepticism to skepticism? Yes, I do. Which is why I'm not absolutely certain about anything. Any more gotchas you want to toss out? Oh, yeah, but we're here on Sundays from 4:30 to 6 p.m. roughly central for people to call in and tell us what they believe and why. There are limits though. Just because we're having people call in and tell us what they believe and why doesn't mean that we're going to have the same conversation with everybody. And it doesn't mean that this is a debate. So if you've written a book like one guy did and you're a former caller to the show, it's probably best that you don't write in your book that you had the pleasure of being invited to debate me when all you did was call into the show, because that's a pretty douchey move. Please, please, please. I know that there are people who are very upbeat right now because of the election. There are also people who are very down now because of the election. Please remember, whether you're trying to celebrate good news or bemoan bad news, we're still in the middle of a fucking pandemic. There are still people dying, and we hit new records for coronavirus numbers, for 7-day death trends, for death trends in total, for cases in total. We hit new record after new record after new record. Wear a goddamn mask. Stay home if you're able to actually do that. Social distance and follow the guidelines of the people in your area, because I'd rather not be doing this show from home a year from now. I would rather have flown Shannon down from Canada to do this in person back in the studio, where we're at least able to interact with something other than a virtual here, elbow bump. There you go, Shannon. Oh, I got the wrong. It needs to be this elbow.
How do I do it?
Boom. Okay. We just do that there. Please take care of yourselves. Please do everything right. We will see you next week. Be safe.
Bye, guys. What will it take for you to start?